Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances. We're talking about working money doesn't bore you to sleep. And it's been lit.
We took away the disclaimer. We just opened it up to lawsuits this week. That's what's up. We just out here. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram, speaking of being out here, at Pay Balances, and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow the individual accounts at the Marcus Garrett, 1T on Twitter, 2Ts everywhere else. Rich is available around the internet at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
And also, don't forget to join our email list so you can receive our brand new 15-minute Paychecks and Balances money plan. You asked us to keep it simple. We got it down to 15 minutes each. Think of them as your guide to financial freedom. To sign up and get the guide, visit paychecksandbalances.com/email. For those of you already on the email list, you're welcome for that giveaway. If you did not read last week's email, I suggest you do so. The second one, where you'll receive our weekly newsletter covering actionable work and money tips and much more. Again, that's paychecksandbalances.com/email.
And if you're like, what's the second one about? We sent it out the first time, told people to get all excited, and then we forgot the link. And then we sent it back out after that. So definitely check that out. And also, Paychecks and Balances is coming to Vegas, or one of us at least. So I'll be speaking on Wednesday at the National Association of Broadcasters Expo on effectively hosting a podcast. So all that stuff that we're doing week to week, whether it's just us or we have a guest. So if you're in town, hit me up. You could find me on the socials. Also, you can email us. Well, email me, rich@paychecksandbalances.com. Now about today's show. What's going on with it, man?
Yeah, for those of you who are new here, I have to open up with a little disclaimer. For those of you who are not new, you know I'm reading 15 books this year as I work through that at paychecksandbalances.com/books, so you don't have to. But as I'm reading these, I have to say this disclaimer. As you listen to today's episode, think about breaking the status quo, however you define that, that you've been taught to think, and ask yourself, who taught this to me? Like, why is it so easy for us to sign up for a 60-month car loan, or to allow banks to so easily convince us to spend 30% of our income on a 30-year mortgage, which I looked into, only 2 in 3 households ever pay off. So 66% of households, or excuse me, 30% of households never pay off their loans. And that's a smart investment. Mm-hmm. Then ask yourself why you never challenged that idea, but yet you challenged the idea of investing in yourself. Just 10%. And a retirement fund, 401k, or several other vehicles that we've talked about on a number of these shows, when the latter is much less risky and much more likely to give you true financial independence. Know better, do better. And please keep that in mind as you enjoy learning even more great personal finance tips on today's episode with Miss Fab Finance herself.
And so Miss Fab Finance, Tanya Rapley, this is her second time on the podcast. Last time we talked to her, it felt like it was about 2 years ago. So we catch up on what's been happening. A lot of nuggets for those who are in the entrepreneurial space and beyond. And a lot about kind of the mindset and the way you need to think about money to change your situation. So here's our conversation with Tanya. And there is a stretch about 18 to 20 minutes into the show where for a couple minutes, the sound gets a little bit shaky, but we promise it does go back to normal right after that. So enjoy our conversation with Tanya, and we'll see you at the end of the show.
Some of you will remember Tanya Rapley from episode 29 when Paychecks and Balances was just a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed podcast eager to find its way in the world.
Yes.
For those of you new to the game, Tanya is a millennial money expert and creator of the award-winning website MyFabFinance. In 2014, she was deemed the new face of wealth building by Black Enterprise Magazine, and her site has been voted the best finance blog for women. A millennial herself, Tanya's mission is to help millennials break the cycle of living paycheck to paycheck so they can become financially free and do more of what you love. Welcome back to the show, Tanya.
Thank you so much, Marcus. And I have to say, I need to get you to record that again for me so I can use it as a drop before I walk out on stage.
Y'all keep playing with my emotions like my dream hasn't been to do voiceovers. Everybody keep coming on like, oh, yo, that's tight. That's like, yo. Y'all, pick me up. I've been trying to get me in the lane. I'm trying to be the next Morgan Freeman.
As many times as I heard that we have a face for radio, I'm like, yo, that's the dream, man.
Thank you so much for having me back, guys. I'm so excited to be talking to you guys and catching up.
Yeah. So a lot has happened since the last time that you were on the podcast. So what are some of the things that you're most excited about that's happened over the past couple of years, or even the past couple of years, or the past year? Because I know we talked a little bit before we got on here. You know, so there are some pretty exciting things that have happened. So what's been going on for you? What's the catch up?
Yeah, well, relocated, left New York City and moved to Los Angeles, California. So that's been a major change of scenery, but it's also been great for my airline miles because a lot of my business is still on the East Coast. So yeah, my husband and I are settled here in California now. I think right when I was on the podcast, I was gearing up to make public speaking a larger revenue stream in my business. And I had a few goals for places that I would travel to speak publicly. So I just came off of delivering a financial workshop in Manila, Philippines. And I was in Puerto Rico this past week. So have graduated from a public speaker in or around my area to an international public speaker in the past year, and building my team too. That's been really important, is building my team, because I knew I had these great things to serve people. I knew I wanted to serve people, but I want to be honest, I was just becoming overwhelmed and almost burnt out because I was trying to do everything and really focus on building a team that supports me these past few years. And it's been great and is allowing me to grow and shift my focus and grow in other areas. So that's what's going on over here.
That's dope. That's dope. So what was the breaking point where you're like, yo, I'm trying to do way too much right now?
I started to hate my business, honestly. and not the people, but my business. Just, it wasn't making sense for me. I knew, and you know, we spoke about this a little bit before, I knew I was creating amazing things. I know that I break financial topics down in tangible manner. I know my stuff works, but I was just burnt out from creating, administering, promoting, and just being the person who was responsible for everything. I had assistants and they were helpful, but there's a difference between someone who wants to help you and someone who's trained as an assistant who comes in specifically to remove some of the workload from your business and you understanding how to work with them. So the breaking point really was just my husband. He looked at me, he was like, you got to get help. Like, and it was when I left my job, you know, cutting back on expenses, I cut back on staff and so forth. I was like, now I'm doing this full time. I should have the time to do it. But the time is like water. It's like a cup of water. And as soon as you free up some of it, you're going to pour more into your cup. And so I was taking on more responsibilities because now I had all this freed up time since I wasn't working as a traditional employee anymore. But eventually that caught up to me. And so, yeah, that was the breaking point where I just was not enjoying what I was doing anymore.
So whom was the, and I have a two-part question, actually, you can answer whichever order. So with the travel miles, I've heard some people try to game the system for their benefit with the credit cards. I'd like to see if you've either tried that already, or is that something you plan on doing in the future, like using a credit card that you pay off month to month just to get the travel rewards? And then as far as the team goes, second part of the question, whom was your MVP? I was about to say LeBron, but people feel all type of way about that. So who was your Curry or whatever your player is? Whom was like, I need this person on my team first?
So the airline miles thing, you have to know what type of person you are. As far as me and my spending, I would love to be the person who says, you know what, I'm going to put this on a credit card and I'm going to pay it off next month. That is not my personality type. My personality type is if you put it on their tongue, you might see something else and you buy that instead. So I don't use my credit cards. I do have cards with airlines for smaller purchases, for discounts, for free check bags and so forth like that. But as far as using it for airline miles, no, not so much. I might rent a car or something like that. Or if I know that a client is going to pay me at a later date, I need to go ahead and book the travel, I'll do it. But I'm not the person who's putting the light bill, the phone bill, all the gas and everything on my credit card in the name of racking up credit card miles. But one of the things that has worked to my advantage is, and this is important for anyone who might travel for work or travel as a public speaker, in my contract, I have stated my preferred airline is American. If you do not book me on American, then you are also responsible for any baggage fees that I would accrue if I am not American. Because that was causing a problem for me. So while I was traveling to different places and so forth, the client might book me on JetBlue, which JetBlue is a great airline, but JetBlue has not since changed their policies to where if you're a basic the basic fare, you have to pay for your bags. If I show up at the airline and have to pay for my bags, I'm paying $50, you know, for that trip for my baggage fees. So being that I fly American primarily, I'm able to accrue miles because I'm traveling for work. But it also just works to my advantage because I do have an American Airlines card. So that's the person I am. I know the only card that I trust myself to pay off every month is my Amex because I have to. So that's how I operate on that end. And then my MVP for my team. You know what? I would say that we are like the Warriors. So they're, you know, I'm from North Carolina. I'm from Charlotte. You know, I guess I'm Steph. And then
and Hornets.
I would say that my editor, Danya, is Draymond Green. Because she's the one who comes up with an email like, this doesn't make sense. So and so and so. So, and she's amazing. And Draymond Green is actually one of my favorite players. So I love Draymond Green. But she definitely comes in and holds it down. Zakiya, I would honestly say that Zakiya is Steve Kerr, because that's my assistant. Because Zakiya, like, really, I trust her to tell me where to go and what to do. I'm like, Zakiya, I forward you this email. Please put it in my Asana. Please put it in my calendar. Tell me when I need to do it. Tell me, put in the deliverables and so forth. And she really ensures that we operate smoothly. And then we have our general manager. I don't know who the general manager is of the Warriors, but my general manager, his name is Benoni Togo.
Yeah. And I know Benoni. Yeah. That's what's up.
Yeah. I ended up running up on Benoni, actually. I ran up on Benoni at Podcast Movement in Chicago because I knew that I was missing this piece of someone who could negotiate, because my career started to take a turn where I was doing more media and I was on air talent. But coming from the space of being a blogger, I had no idea what I should be negotiating for myself. I had no idea what rates should be. And my friend introduced me to Benoni, and then she gave me an idea of what his background was. And I was like, oh, I need this guy. And so I kind of online stalked Benoni until he took me on as a client, until he managed me. But Benoni is definitely the general manager. And I'm so thankful for my team, because I'm in a better space as a business owner because of them. And I'm just looking forward to more success so I can continue to reward them for what they add to the MyFab Finance pie.
Nice.
That's what's up. So you talked about the baggage fees, which, you know, when things are going well, and I'm not going to get all up in your bank account and all that stuff, but, you know, if the things are going well, you got money coming in, and it sounds like you're still maintaining that rigorous, for lack of a better word, financial mindset, because there are some people who might be like, yo, I'm making more, you know, $50 baggage fees, that's nothing. So how do you keep that mindset going despite the fact you're having success and what I presume, you know, you have more income coming in?
Mm-hmm. With more income comes more responsibility. I mean, that's been one thing, is I try to put money aside in my savings accounts, and I don't like to spend the money in my savings at all, because it should be used for emergencies. And I'm the kind of person, even if an emergency pops up, I'm like, but can we cover this in other ways than me pulling it out of my savings? And so that requires me to I keep my cash flow to a bare minimum. And so that means that I'm not borrowing from any other accounts, and I might have a certain amount of money available until the next invoice clears or something of that nature, and I have to travel, and I don't want it to be a matter of I'm going to pull it from this account versus the other one. So yeah, I still definitely keep myself on a strict budget, because there are so many other things that I want to do for my business. And right now I'm self-publishing my first book, but this isn't just I wrote a book, let's throw it on Amazon. You know, we're getting it edited. I had a photo shoot last week. I'm treating this like a launch that a major publishing house would fund, but I'm funding it out of my pocket. And so my money definitely is locked up into different things that required me to be mindful, because I still, even though MyFab Finance has been doing well, I'm still in a growing phase, and I'm still looking to hit that $1 million year. And so up until then, the money that I bring in needs to be invested back into the business. So oftentimes my money is tied back up into the business or into my staff.
I like that. I like that. And so why the self-publishing route versus a traditional publisher?
I spoke to a lot of friends about it. You know, I think a lot now people want traditional publishing for the clout that comes with it, and also now that I'm doing myself, I realize that they underwrite a lot of the things that costs money, such as paying an editor. I remember the first editing quote I got, I was like, $3,500 to edit a book. Like, I was floored. And then I got a graphic design quote, and it's like $8,000. I was like, yo, this is crazy. This is a car. So I definitely understand why people do it. But for me particularly, I spoke to quite a few people who went both routes. One in particular, Patrice Washington, who's amazing. And Patrice, you know, she self-published a book before and she went to a traditional publisher. And she's like, honestly, they didn't bring that much to the table. My book didn't perform. I didn't see a significant difference in working with them. I still found myself doing a lot of the work and having to share revenues with them. And, you know, just talking to other people like that. And when we looked at it, I have a large enough audience for MyFab Finance and a strong enough handle on marketing to the point where I felt like I did not need a publisher. And that was across the board. I do have a spokesperson agent who represents myself and a few other people like Farnoosh Tarabi and Bobby Rebel. And I was talking to Adam and he said, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for you to go the traditional publishing route. So I think that it's important for people to assess their situation if you're looking at both potential outcomes, because now the thing with traditional publishers is they're lazy. They're like record labels. They want you to bring your own audience anyway. And it's like, at this point, then what are you doing for me? If I'm bringing my own audience and setting up my own book tours and everything else, what are you doing for me? So that's why we decided to just go ahead and own the entire process.
Cool. And for those just turning into the show who haven't been around for a while, we had Patrice Washington on episode 69. Great conversation with her. So we definitely encourage people to go back and check that out. So the other thing I was thinking about, and so I'm not going to lie. So I aspire to have the type of impact that you're having right now. I think we've all witnessed the growth that you've had since the last time that you ran the podcast. And there are a lot of people, both entrepreneurs and non, that aspire to have impact, whether it's through their day job or through their side hustle effort. So what do you say to those people who are just getting started and looking up to you like, yo, I want that life?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, the important thing to note is that it doesn't happen overnight. And it is wonderful that I've been on the show before and that the journey has taken me to a different place, because it's a process. I think that we see things on Instagram and people who might just tune into, you know, my feed or become introduced to me and say, oh yeah, she's doing this, she's doing that, this is amazing, I'm gonna be like her. But I started MyFab Finance in 2013. And before I started MyFab Finance, I was planning community programming throughout the borough of Brooklyn from 2010 to 2013. While I started MyFab Finance, I was creating community workshops for people who had experienced foreclosure throughout the city of New York. So I've been doing change agent work and understanding how to create change in communities for a really long time. And you can't shortcut the work when it comes to this work, especially because you're directly impacting the lives of people and they will call you out if you're not doing the work you said you were doing.
Right.
So it's really important to understand that you can't shortcut this work. It's important to listen to people. As soon as people give you feedback on what they need, what they want, listen to them and figure out how you can create things that address those needs. And sometimes, you know what, people will tell you they need something, you create it and you're like, hey, I created this for you, and it's crickets on their end. So that's not always surefire, but it is important to listen to your audience, to listen to your own heart, to listen to your peers, and then do the work. But then also realize that just because you did the work doesn't mean that the people you want to be attracted to the work are going to show up. So it's how do you put yourself and position yourself to be in front of them so that you make it easier for them to discover you. And I think a lot of people operate with, I'm doing the work, they'll discover me. And it's like, no, there's a lot of noise out there. How do you break through the noise and put yourself in the forefront so that they can discover you easily and feel that it was almost, accidental, but it actually was intentional on your behalf.
So right now I have two hands in the air and I'm saying yes. So I just want to point that out. But I was actually thinking earlier today about this idea of getting feedback. And I heard this speaker, her name is Brené Brown. Some people may be familiar. She talks about empathy, courage. See? Yeah, there we go. All that other good stuff. I had a chance to hear her speak and it actually had me thinking about kind of courage and boldness. And I think I've heard you say before in terms of your purpose and mission that part of that is to live boldly. And, with that, it's being comfortable with negative feedback. And in my view is that when you're not comfortable with negative feedback or you try to avoid negative feedback, it's killing your ability to be creative, you know? Mm-hmm. So How have you handled getting negative feedback, and what advice do you have for people who are so anxious and worried about negative feedback that they never get started?
Ooh, negative feedback is going to happen. And one of the things I've had to tell myself is it's easier for people to critique than to create. And so there's always going to be people who critique your work, but they don't have the capacity to create what you've created. So that's the first thing, is that I just have to realize we're in two different fields. And especially, like, there's a lot of online trolls these days. And I remember I've gotten negative feedback out the journey with MyFab Finance. Most recently, it was a woman who, for some reason, her online transaction didn't process properly, or she wasn't able to receive her document. I forwarded it to my assistant, but it fell between the cracks. So she sent us an email talking about how we didn't care about our audience and everything else. And that was hurtful, because I know how much I care about my audience. I think about them every day. I know how much I care. But the first piece of negative feedback that I received was when I created my financial success planner. And now I don't read comments. I don't read ratings. I don't read anything of that nature, because I think that a certain type of person leaves feedback for the most part. And it could be like that negative person who needs a place to vent. So as far as receiving feedback, I seek it from people I trust, don't want to inflict pain on me, if that makes sense. So I have trusted mentors, trusted advisors, my family, my friends, and people who I trust. So people outside the finance space to tell me, honey, you're not playing to your maximum capacity. Drop the ball on this, drop the ball on that. My manager sometimes would be like, you're all over the place, let's get it together. Sometimes it's my husband. You know, my husband really pulled my card when I stopped speaking publicly because of negative feedback. There is miscommunication with these women who booked me, and they basically told me they weren't going to pay me because I didn't deliver what they expected. And I stopped speaking for 2 years because of that. And my husband was a person who got me back in, got my head back in the game. So it's just important to have people who you trust around you, because you want to make sure that any negative feedback comes from a place of love and concern of seeing you grow, versus a place where they want to inflict pain on you, or cause you to stumble, or, you know, cause you to second guess yourself.
Got it.
So it happens. And I would say, don't read the comments. Like, I did a Toyota commercial last year, and the comments were brutal. My little sister went and read the comments, was ready to fight everybody in them. You know, some of them were great, but some of them weren't. You know, I did a Mike.com partnership last year, and I accidentally said Pacific instead of specific. And one of the things, he was like, I can't take her financial advice. She said Pacific instead of specific. Like, bro, check my resume, you know? So it's like, so with that said, it's important to ensure that you're seeking feedback from people who have intention of helping you improve your business, and that it comes from a place of seeing you improve versus a place where they want to inflict some kind of pain or self-doubt on you, because that's out there too. And sometimes they can masquerade that as, you know, as wanting to help you improve, where it really is they want to see you stumble. So just be careful about it. Advice and feedback doesn't have to be warranted from everywhere. Doesn't mean you have to take it from everyone. And just be very discerning.
Yeah, Rich knows I went on a comment block in like 2012. Every now and then I come out of hiatus, so I'm definitely a fan of that advice. Along those same lines, you had a great tweet you also put on your Instagram, and I'll get both in the show notes, but it was, everyone has ideas, but effective execution, ? That's a skill. It takes dedication and discipline to execute, and everyone doesn't have that. And I think that's how you separate yourself from the crowd. So I appreciate you putting your voice back out there, coming back on the show. I really think it's needed. Along those lines, in 2016, you said it was important to never stop learning. Is there any new personal or professional advice as this journey has changed in these last couple of years that has reshaped your view or your approach to that never stop learning?
I maintain never stop learning. And thank you so much for sharing that quote. You know what? There's a lesson from that, because I shared that quote, and I, you know, it was on my Facebook, my Instagram, my Twitter, and then my Instagram. And one of my homeboys reposted the quote, but they had cut me out of it. And I was like, that's my quote. He's like, for real? I've seen it everywhere. And so and so and so. I was like, yeah, that's my quote. They cut me out of it. So protect your stuff, guys. Protect your stuff. Because the internet is a wild place, and you just never know when you'll see things that you created somewhere else. And I will say that that's important, is protecting what you create. I think that when I started MyFab Finance, I really wanted to ensure that it was something that I was going to follow through. With me being a Gemini, I've had a lot of ideas, and execution, going back to that quote, execution meant the difference between my other ideas and the success of MyFabFinance. But also, once I realized that this was something I was going to stick with, I went, made sure I had MyFabFinance trademarked, and did what I needed to do to protect my business legally. And no matter if you're doing it for the love or whatever it may be, if you're putting your time and energy into it, it's costing you something. And you want to make sure that you're protecting that, and protecting it legally, protecting it emotionally, protecting it in a variety of ways. So I would just say, like, operate smart, and make sure that you are operating your business legally, because there's a lot of people who just kind of are doing things and not legally protected.
So speaking of which, I have no idea, but they tell me all the time eagerly. I never ask. They volunteer this information. But the parents like to tell me that you can never prepare for having a child. Is entrepreneurship like that? Is there any steps that people can take to prepare, or is it the journey itself? And then you gain that knowledge, and that is the preparation.
I was wondering where you were going with that one.
I mean, I wonder, is it something you can truly prepare for? Because I think that's holding people up.
I love that you said, I was wondering where you're going. So yes, absolutely. I don't know if I shared what happened to me when I started my business full time. I might've still been shell shocked at that point when I started MyFabFinance full time, but I started MyFabFinance with a contract that replaced my full-time salary. And within 1 month had to walk away from that contract. The only thing I think you can prepare for things on your end, and that's ensuring that you have enough money saved. That's the primary thing that you prepare for, and enough revenue streams, so that if something unpredictable happens with one revenue stream, your other revenue streams can come in to the rescue until you figure out what to make sense out of what just happened with that other one. Because at this point, we have six, moving into seven different revenue streams for MyFabFinance, and that was really important for me because I might not want to push online courses, you know, and I think that launching and convincing people to buy and selling and so forth, that takes a lot out of you. And sometimes I'm not up for it. And it is nice to have the option to say, you know what, I'm going to go do this cool spokesperson deal so I don't have to promote a course for the next 5 months. And so it is important to build multiple revenue streams in your business, because I think that is one thing that you can control, and the amount of money that you save. You can't control what happens to you. You can't control, you know, if you get pregnant 1 month after. Well, you can kind of control that, kind of, if you're on birth control. But for the most part, you know, life happens, and the best thing you can do is be as prepared as you can, which is having the money to take care of whatever may occur. And having options, creating as many options for yourself as possible. But yes, and I know when I quit my job and resigned to do MyFabFinance full time, I thought my first day was going to be, you know, we're drinking like champagne and celebrating, and I'm kicked back. And nope, I was furiously working on my computer trying to figure out how to replace that income consistently. And so it is definitely one of those things that you can prepare up into a point, and then you just have to say, you know what, I'm just going to address what happens as it comes with a level head, and hopefully with enough income that I can make the best decision possible for myself.
And did you have either a magic number or amount in mind? Was it 3 months of expenses, or did you say once I get to 30,000, did you have any type of formula, or was it when you felt comfortable?
It was a combination. At first it was 6 months of my overhead, and then my job pissed me off, and it was 3 months. And I talked to my husband. I said, babe, we good? He said, yeah, we're good. I said, okay, I'm leaving. But at that point, I also did have revenue streams coming in from MyFabFinance. I would have never left with 3 months of my overhead if I did not have the revenue streams coming in from MyFabFinance that I had coming in. By the time I left my job, I already had been on the cover of Black Enterprise. I was already speaking publicly and traveling around and producing events for companies. At this point, I know my job felt like they were being slighted by the time I actually ended up resigning. So it wasn't, I didn't say, okay, I have 3 months and I'll figure it out. It's like, you know what, I've kind of figured this out, and I'm going to go ahead and go into this full time. I have the income coming in, and I have money set aside. And fortunately enough, I did not have to touch any of that money until, so I resigned in September 2015. Me and my husband got married and paid for our wedding cash in February of 2016. I didn't end up having to touch any of that money until we moved to Los Angeles in January of 2017.
And so you mentioned saving money, which a lot of people were probably like, save, I need to save more. What did you do differently to kind of help you position yourself financially to be able to make some of these moves? So what was the saving strategy?
My saving strategy actually was to make as much money possible with MyFat Finance and put it away. That was my saving strategy. I was using my income to pay my bills and to cover the MyFat Finance operating costs and working on eliminating debt with my income. And then any money that came in from MyFat Finance, and I was seeking all revenue streams, launching products, launching courses and so forth, pushing products and courses. Any money that came in from MyFat Finance went into my savings account. So that was my saving strategy. It's just like, I feel like your business has to make money in order for you to feel comfortable leaving your job or the promise of making money. And so I made my money that I was making for my business create that emergency fund or create my cushion.
And I think that's a good, honestly, a good plug for your own site, because you have the quote that money isn't as hard as we assume it is. Is that still true? And if so, can you expand on what you meant by that quote?
Money isn't as hard as we assume it is. Life is. No, so I mean, money is money. Money is a tool. Money has, I wouldn't even say money assigns value to things. People assign values to things with money. But when we look at it as an instrument and so forth, it is about making the conscious decision about how you're going to use money in your life and how you're going to allow it to impact you. It is not as hard as people assume it is to make money. And it's definitely not as hard to properly manage money. What tends to be difficult for people is managing their emotions and managing their wants and needs and managing the expectations of others and the expectations they have. That's what's difficult. And so that's why a lot of the work that we do with MyFab Finance is around mindset and barriers and relating to other people in your life as it pertains to money, because that's usually what gets people in trouble. Money will not get you in trouble itself. It's the attitudes and behaviors that people take on as it pertains to money.
And so you mentioned it's not hard to make money. And so there are people who are probably like, it's hard for me. So any advice for folks who are trying to think of ways to make more money? And of course, you hear things like, go drive Uber and, go do this whole shared economy thing. But I guess what's the basics for someone who's like, yo, I got a 9-to-5, or maybe I don't, and I need more so I can live this life I want. Like, where do I start so I can start stocking more money away?
Yeah, you know what, Rich? It's when people come to me and they're saying, I'm giving them options and they're telling me how all of those options won't work. And I'm like, well, what solutions do you see? Because if there's a problem, there's a solution. And it really is about becoming more solution oriented in your own life, whether that is reducing your expenses, solution oriented in others' lives, how you can create things to solve their problems, or how you can do things to solve your own problems. Because we have options. That's the amazing thing. This is, you guys have an international audience, of course, but I don't know if they listen to podcasts in Cuba and in communist countries. I don't know. I don't think they have access to these things. So most likely people who are listening to this operate in a democracy and live in a democratic society. And we have options. That's the beautiful thing about it. And don't limit your options available to you because of pride, because of perception, because I'm telling you, I've just heard too many stories of people who made it happen because of their sheer willpower or the desire to change their situation. And we can create excuses or we can create solutions. It takes the same amount of energy, but one of them changes your outcome. Mm. So I will honestly say it's maybe driving Uber is a short-term solution. But one of the things that my mom told me when I went to college, and I came from a middle-class background, and I guess I was kind of feeling myself when I got to college, and I was like, I'm not going to do that. No, it was when I graduated from college. And I was like, I have a degree. I'm not working in the mall. My mom was like, you're not above anything. Okay. Like you have to figure it out, because right now you have student loans coming in. You're not above working in the mall. I don't care if you have a degree, you don't have a job with that degree. So you need to figure it out. And that was a lesson early on. So even when I was working, I had a job, I was still side hustling, because we're responsible for creating our own solutions at times.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. My father took a slightly different approach. And at the time, I won't, hate's a strong word, but it was a tight ship, I should say. And I remember he started preparing me roughly around 17. He's like, what you going to do at 18? I was still in high school. He's like, so when you graduate, when you going to be out of here? Like, I got things to do, moves to make. Like, at 18, you got to be gone. I was like, man, this dude is serious. I got to figure this thing out. So it was like.
Here. Oh, my God.
Yeah, there was never no other option. That's the thing that's strange to me is like, well, you gave me college or military. And he honestly seemed indifferent to either one. My grandfather was in the military. So he was just, you ain't going to be here at 18. I don't care what you do or where you go. I'll support you in either venue. But this house won't be a convenient place for you to live after 18. I was like, all right, then. So kind of accelerated that plan. But along this same lines, one thing that I don't know that it's new, but it seems to be the latest synergy is everyone's talking about automation. So some people are probably going to listen to this, and Rich knows that, I struggle with my soft skills. People talk about it. I've been a manager for a long time, but I still struggle with the soft skills. So I take that fatherly approach. I'm like, yo, get it done. Get it done. You know, you either get it done or you don't, but just get it done. That being said, I've heard that automation helps with that. So people are going to listen to this. They'll be like, oh, that's impossible. I can't do it. I've tried. I've had all these budgets. I've failed on all of them. 50, 30, 20, 80, 20, 70, 30. Doesn't really matter. Is there any tools that you found that you can say, okay, well, I don't, like you talked with the credit card. I know this is a personal weakness of mine, and this is how I fixed it through X. Like, have you found that?
Yeah. Creating boundaries, budgeting. It makes me feel like a terrible financial educator, but I became a financial educator because I was not in the best financial situation. But budgeting was not my strong suit. I didn't grow up in a household where they budgeted regularly growing up. Even now, budgeting, I do a budget for the purpose of understanding what my monthly overhead is and understanding how if it might be shifting because I'm taking on more responsibilities as it relates to the business. But I operate best when I just create boundaries. So I say, you have XYZ amount of money to spend on these things. And once it's gone and you're done. And I think that for some people who are just like, you know what, I'm not going to look at what I spent today and mark it out and say, okay, you have seven more dollars that you can spend on dining out. It might be helpful for someone to upload cash to say Square has a Square Cash card. It might be helpful to upload cash to your Square cash card. And like, once this is spent, I'm done. Like, I know that I've reached my maximum because budgets might not create the boundaries that you need. And when you think about automating things, automating is a way of kind of setting boundaries because the boundary between yourself and doing the activity and yourself and not completing the activity that you said you wanted to do or the task that you said you wanted to do. So by setting up a, loading money onto a prepaid card or something like that, you are automating, I guess, your budgeting process because you're taking the need for you to adhere to individual spending items out of the equation, saying once this is done, this is done. Because for some people, it's just too detailed. And that doesn't make them a bad person. It's just you have to understand your personality type. And everybody is not the tedious, I'm going to sit down every night or every Sunday and write down my line items. So just give yourself a budget, give yourself a spending allowance. And once you've exceeded that spending allowance, like you're done for the most part for those categories, whether it's entertainment, hair and beauty, et cetera. Because I think a lot of people get in trouble is they just don't have any boundaries. And even a budget won't help them because a budget, you write it down on paper or put it in an Excel spreadsheet. But if you're not going to adhere to it, it doesn't matter what you wrote down. So finding a way to make sure that you kind of have to adhere to it. So you have to put that money on that card and use that card for those purchases. So leave the other one at home, the one that you pay your household bills with and so forth.
Yeah, I am all about automation because I'm one of those people like left to my own devices. I know Marcus is more rigorous with the pen, the paper, and bruh, I'm not making fun of you. Like, it's effective. But for me, I know that I'm not going to be the person who every day, every night, whatever, is going to look at my bank account, going to look at what's coming in, going out. And I got one of those reward credit cards. And I was like, yo, I want to make the best of this. I'm at a place where I'm not carrying personal credit card debt. You know, I got a car note or whatever, but I'm in a place where I feel like I can take advantage of these rewards. But if I just charge everything to my card and then I'm supposed to be periodically paying it off through the month on my own or going in and looking at the end and trying to figure out what's from this month, last, whatever. And I know all those things are automatically logged. It just stresses me out. So I ended up relying on a tool called Debitize, where essentially it automates the payment of your credit card bill. So you put something in your credit card and then it'll automatically pull that amount out of your bank account, like right then and there. Because I think the trap some people fall into is when they don't see money directly coming out of their bank account, they assume that they have more money to spend, even though they have this like credit card bill that's building up that they're not thinking about. Or maybe that's just me, where I'd be like, yo. Oh,
right. Well, it's not just you, and I'll try to, you know, y'all know I get on my conspiracy rants. So I'll try to keep this short. I'll keep this down to like 60 seconds. But there's also algorithms that they run. This is legal, where they usually run it in batches. So you go out, let's say you make 10 purchases, and whatever order you make them in, they'll charge you by most expensive, not by the number of purchases. They also hold it open knowingly as available balance. So I made a joke on Twitter, but it's actually real. I'll go out one day, and if you don't know your budget, you'll look at your available balance. And I joked, okay, $2,000. And then 12 o'clock comes around, you got $2 in your account because it holds that available balance open. But all those pending charges are just sitting behind the scenes. So if you don't know that you've been out running around, making it rain and doing all these things you've been doing throughout the month, day, whatever the case may be, then it's still your responsibility to know your actual balance. I have so many times logged in and my available balance has been off by hundreds. And I mean, that's insane. I'm like, and I'll look, and I'm not going to say the bank, but I know because I turned off the debit card feature, where it'll draft even when you don't have money in the account. I turned that off years ago once I figured out I could. And one day it was like the 31st. I get paid on the 1st. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go shopping. And it turned on my card. It's like the bank was frustrated that it couldn't charge me fees. And I was like, yo, like, why don't you just, I know there's money in the account, and it was holding it as pending. And I'm literally looking at my phone. I'm like, you mother, embarrassed in the middle of Tarjay, you know, trying to get my little decor on. But I'm trying to be nice, but don't trust these companies to manage your money for you. If anything, they'll game it in a way that they do and mismanage it for you. They'll misrepresent it. A couple other tools, and I'll say this is we have the owner of Debitize. I'll get that in the show notes for folks who do want to use a budget. I'll highlight the 50-30-20 budget that I did for Nerd Wallets. And I still continue to use and plug Mint. So that's still a tool that I like, but I use I don't really have a budget. Rich knows I pay all my bills by the second. It's not like I'm sitting around the next 28 days wondering what's going on. I just pay my bills by the second. And I know whatever money is left, it's more of an 80-20 budget. So I just know that next 80% is for me to do whatever I want.
You also don't have a choice, though, because you're getting paid once a month. So I'm sure that probably inspires you in some ways as well.
Well, I used to have a choice, but similar to Tanya, which is why I appreciate her saying that, is I'm not as responsible as people think I am. So if I have money sitting there, I'm like, I'll find a way to spend it. I'll even find a justification to spend it. I'm like, man, I mean, it's just sitting there, and like, I'll go out and spend it. So I get it out of my hands. Like, you know, it's a simple principle. I can't spend money I don't have. And then generally I just log into Mint the next month to see, does this align in the areas that I want it to? So I don't have the budget police, you know, come out or anything like that. But generally I try to stick to a 50-30-20 budget. So 20% for savings, 30 for fun, and 50% for everything else. But generally it just breaks down to 80-20 because, as most people know, fun and everything else blends throughout the month. So I'll find an argument for like, oh, really? This is like a business lunch, actually. You know, actually this whiskey. And I'll find a way to justify spending money. So I need to get it. Exactly. So I think it's equally important to know yourself instead of try to find these one size fits all. That's why I find these articles, frankly, annoying, because I'm like, it doesn't work for everyone, but you do need to find the system that works for you.
Yes, I hate one size fits all finance. I hate it. And I think traditionally that's what's been offered. And I think that is a limited approach to personal finance. And I think that is, that's the reason why there's been an uprising, one may say, of personal financial educators and experts like ourselves, is because we realize that traditional banking systems and the structures they created for us don't necessarily work for us. And they were only serving a certain type of person. But what happens to everybody else? We make money. We want to know how we can make our money work best for us based on our traits and personality, our habits. And so I totally agree with you. And I'm happy that we're on the same page with that, because there have been times where I'm just talking about and they're like, no, actually, no, it's not black and white. It's great for some people.
Yeah, I'm not even going to go down that spiel. I'll be on here for a much longer podcast. You know, I'll probably have to start clapping and things like that. So I'm going to get in the show notes, because people are probably going to think I'm crazy, but they've already done a study about it. I mean, for people who are aware of it, it shouldn't surprise them. But they've done several studies, and it's still legal where a bank can rearrange the basically the debits that you make, since everyone's using debit cards now, to maximize the fees that they have for you. And if folks are interested, reach out to me offline, marcus@paychecksandbalances.com. I'll also talk about some ways that you can turn that off, because I didn't even know that feature was available to me. I just turned it off because it was just annoying and I didn't like them gaming that system with me. I'm still with this bank, and I'll stop there. As far as it goes with debt management, because I think that's another component that people are dealing with, either credit card or student loans. What do you think is a major common mistake people have when it comes to specifically managing their debt? And then how can they fix that mistake?
I think that especially people who have a large amount of debt or multiple debt is not employing the snowball method to help them make a bigger dent on their debt. Sometimes I feel like sometimes we're just, you know, they're spreading the money around to all of them, paying minimum payments on everything, instead of figuring out a way that they can take a significant chunk out of one and eliminate that one quickly so they can allocate those funds to the next one. So I think it is spreading it thin and having the belief that just because you're paying the minimum payment and you can afford the minimum payment, that you're okay. Just because you can afford to pay the minimum payment doesn't mean that you can afford to pay your debt back. And so I think that that is a big mistake that I see people make.
And I'll get this in the show notes for a more detailed definition. Can you give a bit of a description between the snowball? And I think the other one's the avalanche method, but it sounds like you're going for the snowball.
Yeah. So the snowball method, which is my favorite one, because people with my personality types, I have to do the, I need to really understand what my personality type is. but I will say that it is, I like small wins. I become discouraged if I feel like I'm putting in the work and not experiencing any rewards. Or just feel like I'm kind of just running a long marathon, which is why I'm not a runner. But I think that so the way the snowball method works is you continue to pay all of your debts, but you focus on paying one debt more aggressively. That can be the debt that's the higher interest rate. For some people, for a lot of people, that's the debt with the smallest balance first. You pay that one off, so you look at a snowball and you're kind of rolling it into the ground and creating the base of your snowman. So you're rolling it and rolling it, rolling it, so you get to a point where you pay off that smaller debt, and then you use the money that you were using to aggressively pay off that smaller debt to pay off the next smaller debt or the next debt that you select. And you continue that process. So say you're paying $25 minimum on all your bills, and then you're paying $75, no, let's say $100 on this one bill, but that bill is $500. So once you've paid five payments of $100, then you can take that $100 and put it towards another debt that you're paying $25 on. So now you're paying $125 on that debt. Work to aggressively pay that one off, then take that amount, that $125, and put in another debt. So now you're paying $150 on that next debt, and you just continue to roll the snowball in that manner.
And that's important, because I think people are going to be like, well, I'm paying the minimum, what does it matter? So I actually read recently, and it was so crazy, I actually didn't think it was true, and I had to look it up. It said how one shopping spree of $1,000 can cost you 13 years. So the average minimum payment is like 2%. The average APR right now is 18% on these credit cards. So if you spent $1,000 on a, I don't know, Macy's, I don't want to pick on Macy's, a department store, and you only made the minimum payment, you would be making that minimum payment for 13 years. I don't have the interest rate memorized. And so people are like, okay, so what difference can a small difference make? And I'll get this in the show notes. It was an article from Chase. They said just adding $25 to that payment could be the difference between 4 years and 13 years. So really those small, you know, things that you're not thinking about, oh, it's only $25, only $10. Those actually do make a really big difference over the course of that minimum payment, because you're only paying 2% of the outstanding balance. And usually those APRs, I mean, you can just do the math. Your APR is 18%. That means each year you're only paying 16% off. And that assumes you never make any more payments on that card, which, come on, folks, we know that's not true. Richard, sounds like you have a question.
I speak at colleges a lot, and I do an activity of that nature with the students. We use Coachella tickets as an example, and we start out with $399 because that's that was the base Coachella ticket price. I want to say last year. I don't know if it's the same this year since Beyonce's performing. It's $399. Then, but we say, you know, you're going VIP because you're putting in a credit card, and we tend to spend more than we normally would spend when we're putting it on credit because we don't feel that immediate sting. And then for the students, it would that those Coachella tickets would take 10 years to pay off using the standard interest rate for Coachella tickets, and it would cost double the price. And so, yeah, people don't understand how the minimum payment is not set up for you. Like, it is not set up for you to win. It's set up for the bank to continue making money and to give you and to provide the perception that you're actually doing something right.
You know, and I'm listening to this and I'm thinking about a point where I had, it was either two or three credit cards, and I had one card that was, it was so bad that I was accumulating like $100 in interest per month. Like, the bill would come, it'd be like, your minimum payment is like 142. And oh, by the way, we're going to take this $100 in interest, bro, because you're mad irresponsible. So does your advice change for someone as far as the snowball method? And I know the whole goal is to pay off the smaller balance, but like when you have multiple credit cards or multiple forms of debt, you're getting murdered in interest on one card, but then you have this smaller bill where you're like, yeah, I have this smaller bill. It's not as significant because it's not killing me on interest. Do I still start with that first versus this other bill where I'm getting hammered on interest? So any thoughts on that where someone's in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at what makes sense for you. I would say that if everyone acted logically when it came to money, then we wouldn't have any financial issues, to be honest. So yeah, logic does imply that you should start with that higher interest rate debt. But I wouldn't want anyone to start with that and then become discouraged during the process and say, forget it all. So I think that it is really important for you to understand what motivates you and keeps you motivated. So hopefully it is like the understanding that this debt is expensive and it's costing you a significant amount of money, and this interest rate is absolutely ridiculous, and you want to get rid of that card as soon as possible. Because I have had clients where we look at the interest rate, we look at the annual fees, and I'm like, this card is costing you money. Like, this card is absolutely ridiculous. And we do focus on eliminating that one. But I've had clients where we start with that method and then they become disgruntled, or I don't hear from them down the line, and we have to adjust their repayment plan because they really do need those smaller wins throughout the process.
Yeah, and I would only say to the college student listeners out there, because, well, shoot, many years ago now, I was like you, and you're probably thinking, you know what, you know, this is a good story. This is very engaging. Wow, Coachella tickets. I can relate to that. Wow, they found something cool. You're probably thinking, but I'm going to be completely different. When I graduate, six figures coming right out of college, because that was my thinking. That's why I'm going. And my first job with a major in business, I made $19,000. So I just encourage you to listen to this portion of the discussion and recognize that maybe I you know, I hope you are the exception, but you might not come out of college at that first job making all this money back that you think you're going to make to pay off the school loans and the credit cards at the first job. It'll get done over time.
I definitely agree with that. I definitely agree with that. And it's a different reality now. While that's an exception, is graduating from college and, you know, making six figures and doing all these things. But I also want to second that with, if anyone is preparing to graduate, because this is on the eve of graduation season, is allow yourself to settle into your income and your salary before you take on additional expenses. Because when we graduate, the first thing we want to do is we want to go buy a car. Once we got that job offer, maybe gotten our first paycheck or whatever, maybe go buy a car, get an apartment, so-and-so-and-so, and do all these things that make us feel like an adult. And then we realize that we can't afford this lifestyle we set up for ourselves, and we haven't even started paying our student loans back. So I would honestly say kind of back into it. Drive that car for as long as you can. It may not be fun to drive your college car, your high school car, but drive that car for as long as you can. Live in your more affordable living situation as long as you can afford to, until you get a better understanding of what your financial situation will be on a month-to-month basis.
Yes, and if your father's not trying to force you to choose between the military and leaving the house at age 18, I would also encourage you to stay at home as long as possible, because housing is actually the most largest category of expense for everyone, including adults, millennials, and I guess Generation Z. I think that's what comes next.
I would stay at home and save, because yes. I ended up graduating from college and going back home, you know, under the guise of, I'm going to figure things out and get my life back together. I was partying with my friends. I was going on trips, you know, and I wasn't saving money. Like, I was saving money by living with my parents, but I was spending all the money that I was saving and that I was quote unquote saving by living with my parents. And so it is important to remember that if you're staying at home, that's part of your strategy. It's not a freebie to spend money on the things that, I don't advocate not spending money. So we know MyFab Finance is not about deprivation. So you definitely want to spend money on things, but not excessively to the point where you're not getting ahead financially, which was the goal of moving back with your parents, was to get ahead financially.
And so you mentioned going out, you know, doing the fun things with friends. And I know from my experience, probably all of our experiences, you know, sometimes you get to that point where you're like, yo, life really just came at me fast. So have you ever had an experience where you felt just like completely overwhelmed financially? And this could be either before or during this entrepreneurial journey that you're on now. And how did you go about handling that? What did you learn from it? And what do you say to someone else who's, and so they may be living at home and thinking they're saving money, but then they're still spending it at bars, whatever else. And they realize like, yo, I'm in over my head. Like, how do you handle that situation? And what's been your own personal experience with that?
Yeah, man, that, so me and a few other financial educators have been honest about that. And I wrote a blog post on it actually, that I experienced a lot of shame last year because as a financial educator, I found myself in business related debt that I had created. So like my consumer debt and everything was cool, was I had taken care of that because, you know, that was debt to me that was not an investment in myself or my business or what I believed in. But sometimes the things we tell ourselves, like, it's okay to create this because it's for the greater good, because it's for an investment. And I found myself in business related debt. I had like $7,000 worth of business related debt. And I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. I was like, oh my God, they're going to take my MyFab Finance card from me. And I was talking to one of my friends who was a fellow person in the finance space. And he was like, look, that's money that was spent with the goal of building more assets and creating more money out of it. He was like, sometimes our returns aren't immediate. And it's not like you spent it on something where you're just like, you know, I'm going to go ball out and buy bottles at the club. You know, you were building a business, you hired coaches and did these other things with that money. And now it's starting to pay a return and I'm seeing a return on my investment, but that return is 1 year later after I created that debt. And so absolutely, I found myself in that place and I had to buckle down. I shared on my personal Instagram how I did not take any trips last year. Even though I wanted to take international trips, I did not take any international trips last year because I was focused on making that debt that I created work for me and to earn a return on my investment that I put into my business. So it happens to people who even do this work. And that's why I say I know myself. And that's why I don't use consumer cards for that purpose or take out personal debt for that purpose, because I know myself. And it happens. And sometimes you just have to forgive yourself and then figure out what your plan of action is going to be and how you're going to tackle it. Because it's so easy to get depressed and down. And I could have shut my fat finance down and never earned a return on that investment. But I had to create a strategy for making it make sense.
Yeah. So I just wanted to give another example of why it might matter. Because, you know, honestly, I did the same thing. The first thing I did when I graduated college, actually, I don't even think I graduated yet, was buy a car with rims. I won't bore y'all with that story again today. But the difference, hey, you know, the difference being, and I actually posted this on our Twitter account, if y'all want to go and read the full story, the difference between a credit score of 730 and a credit score of 600, and they used a 2016 Camry at 23,000, was a person with a credit score of 730 would pay $9,000 less over the life of the vehicle. So, you know, these things do make a difference. They are practical. So, you know, once again, you got a credit score of 740. And, you know, similarly, I mean, it's actually something I heard in college. It had to do with a friend that was crossing. But it's like, if you didn't help me make it, don't tell me how to spend it. So I that's still my advice to this day. I'm not trying to tell people to do what to do with their money, but I can tell you there's definitely smarter ways to spend it. So you don't have to work harder way until you're an old senior millennial like myself speaking on a podcast, trying to, you know, shape the minds of the youth. But those small little numbers, that $25 there, oh, my credit score is only, you know, 50 points lower. That's thousands of dollars in difference. And that's why I want to bring that up. And, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. I don't want to leave with that note, but you have, if folks were like, okay, you know, you've convinced me, you know, tears streaming down your face, you panic, you know, you got us in your eardrums, you don't know what to do. Tanya has a hashtag banish the balance challenge, where you talk about good debt, bad debt. What should these people do, and what is the Banish the Balance Challenge?
The Banish the Balance Challenge is a self-guided e-course to help people organize their debt, prioritize their debt, create a debt repayment plan, understand their options when it comes to eliminating debt, as well as join a community of individuals who are also working to pay off debt. So I created the Banish the Balance Challenge when I was paying off my consumer debt, which I was successful in. But in the meantime, like now I'm like, okay, now we have this business debt. And so the Banish the Balance Challenge, there's a community of people who are all working to pay off their debt. I remember when the iPhone X came out, someone in the group was like, I really want the iPhone X. And everybody talked her off the ledge of the iPhone X and everything else that she could do with her money instead of purchasing an iPhone X. And so it is just this great community of people who are like-minded and kind of can, I want to say it's like AA or like, I want to say it's Shoppers Anonymous or Over Shoppers Anonymous. Yeah. I forgot what that group was, but it really is. It's a community of people who are committed to eliminating debt from their lives. But before we add you to community, you go through the self-guided e-course and learn more about the debt that you have, because that can feel overwhelming. So it is helping you organize it, helping you understand your interest rates, and giving you these tangible lessons each step of the way so that your debt doesn't seem like the monster that you may feel that it is. And one of the best emails that I got from someone came this past January, and she was saying that she signed up for the Banish the Balance Challenge. And prior to joining the challenge, she felt like she was an idiot when it pertained to money. She couldn't figure out why she couldn't get it right. And she paid off $1,000 while being in the Banish the Balance Challenge in a month. And that's the most debt she's ever eliminated. And she was just so grateful and felt, you know, finally felt accomplished when it came to her finances for the first time in her life. And so I created from the perspective of someone who's not been perfect with her money. And like, what can I do to help you, even if you may feel imperfect? What can I do to set you up for success?
Got it. So encourage people to definitely check out the site. Enroll, go through the process. It almost sounds like you got a pledge to get in, and then like
your debt,
and then you get to the other side. I was gonna try and come up with some witty fraternity sorority name, but I don't want to be here for like 10 minutes trying to come up with that. But
it's called a champion.
And come on, debt by debt, it's right there, bro.
Well, I mean, because you're not talking at this exact moment. So we're getting to the end of the show, and I have one more question here, and it's around, you know, people who are thinking about making more money in particular. So we've talked a little bit about entrepreneurship, a little bit about the whole debt struggle. And so what's the best way in your perspective for someone to position him or herself to either take the leap or start generating money on the side when it does feel impossible, when they do feel like they have a lot of things going on?
The first step is to realize that there is money out here all around us, and there's money for you to get. I think we have to first release the perception that there is not money readily available for us to earn. But the second is think about what you're good at or what people can pay you to do. If you feel like you're not good at anything, or you have hands. We all have resources available to us, whether they be part of our physical body or our possessions, that allow us to generate more income. It could be your mind. It could be a talent that you have. And so I would say, first, understand that there is money out here for you to make. And then second, figure out what you can do with your resources in order to generate more revenue and generate more income. But I think we have to also release the belief that it's owed to us, you know, that we're entitled to earning more money because we went to college or so forth. Like, there's a lot of people running around thinking they're entitled to earning more money, but that doesn't mean they're going to make more money, because you have to do the work in order to make more money, at least initially in setting it up. So first, understanding that it is there and it's there for you to take it. But second, what do you have available for you to capitalize on so that you can make more money? And then third, do the work, because things come. Even passive income requires work initially to become passive.
Yeah, a director told me one time, I repeat it all the time, actually, is you have to work really hard to get to a point where you hardly work, but it can be done.
Very true.
Good.
Unless you're one of these rappers. I was listening to an interview today and I was like, what? This is what's happening with music right now? Okay.
But, I mean, that being said, and that's the focus of, I think, all industries. A lot of those cats work forever. And you only see them when they blow up. I was actually watching something on Vice the other day. It was actually an interesting story. Unfortunately, I'm too uncool to know who this rapper was, but his story was interesting. And he was talking about why he didn't sign. And he was like, I became an indie rapper. The indie lifestyle chose me. So I didn't want to sign with the label and sign away all my rights. And he was talking about he was still making $25,000, $30,000 a month, which, you know, to the rappers are like, oh, that's nothing, that's pocket change, but that's 100% of his money. And he said if I was working for the label, they would say, well, we're gonna say 92%, I believe he was saying. So he's like, why would you take 90% of my money when I could take 100% of all the money? And it was just a different mindset. And they interviewed this music lawyer, and he said a lot of rappers are like, okay, well, I can make $1 million, but if they take 80%, or I can make $30,000 and take all 100%. And he was selling t-shirts, hats, and everything like that. But, you know, to your exact point, I think a lot of people are like, well, that's not for me. And honestly, what I would say to those people, then find somebody who is, grab on their coattails and be their assistant. You know, we ain't all got to be, you know, with the rock all the time. Yo, exactly. But I mean, be a supporter to the person who is. So if you're like, well, that's not me, I can't do this, I can't do that, which frankly, I disagree with, because a lot of times the first thing I ask myself is, why not me? You know, I see somebody doing something.
Why not me?
Yeah. And then I, you know, like you said, I go out there, stalk that person. If they'll talk back to me, I'll be like, yo, what did you do to get to the position you're at? And, you know, respectfully, if they have the time or what are the resources to do so. A lot of people are flattered by that if you come with the appropriate energy, not like, yo, put me on, you know, hook me up. Yeah. But, you know, I am willing to learn, and here's what I've already done to prove that I'm willing to learn and go in these same similar footsteps. I just need to know the path. That's where I'm confused. I'm confused on the journey. The destination I know I want demonstrated that type of hunger.
I would say work ethic and demonstrating work ethic is undeniable, and it will get to a point. I was watching an interview, actually, while I was at the hairdresser today, I was listening to an interview, and it was this well-known female rapper who had kind of like a protege or a mentee, and they asked her why she decided to work with her. And she said, because I saw her work ethic, I saw her working. And that was someone who I said, I'm going to invest my time in because she's willing to do the work. And then right before this podcast, I had a call with one of my coaches who we're going to collaborate on a project with. He's like, you know, I've coached you over the years, and one thing I know is you'll do the work. People respect people who do the work. And sometimes you may feel like you're doing the work and no one is paying attention, but people are paying attention. And it does pay off when you do the work, and you do the work intentionally. And I don't think you can replace that.
Yeah. And I'll end with this, and I'll allow you to wrap up in a couple of things that you want to plug. I think another thing that I think we're talking about here is breaking out of the mold, because people are always like, I want to do great things following the average path. And so if the, you know, median income, for example, is 50,000, if you open it, so most people are like, how do I do a 9-to-5 to even make or beat that? And I'm like, I mean, that in itself is limiting. That's 280 days out of the year. That's 280. So if you were to find something that you could do for yourself for 365, you got now 24 hours in the day, or you could subtract 8 for sleep, but you're looking at $130 a day. And I feel like that's a lot easier for people to process, instead of how do I make 50,000 a year? Like, how do I make this 30,000 a month? It's like, what do you need to make a day? Because if you can take that back, especially if you're young, for those folks that are in college and they're about to take that first step out there, instead of who can I get to pay me this, what can I do to make this? But you need to know what this is. Like, what is that amount of money that you need to, you know, either frame or start off your journey for happiness? I think most people are like, I'm gonna go out here, I'm gonna get a job, I'm gonna follow this nice average traditional path that has been set forth for the last 150 years, and then wonder why you're then in the exact same point or journey that everyone else is frustrated with 10, 15, 20 years down the road. It's like, well, you followed that exact same path. So if you want a different result, follow a different path. Don't do this traditional route. So break out of the mold. I do want to thank you for joining us. And now that you have broken out of the mold, world traveler, taking the personal finance responsibility around the world, is there any upcoming projects that the people should keep an eye out for?
Absolutely. I finished writing my first book, The Money Manual. It is releasing during Financial Literacy Month. We'll be doing a whole campaign of activities to release the book. So if you're listening to this before the book launches, it's coming. If you're listening to this after the book is launched, the book is out. Go check it out. The
Go
Money Man.
Get it.
It will be available on Amazon.com and our forthcoming website, financialsuccess2018.com. And so I'm really excited about that. And we have mindset is a really big thing for me, and getting people set up with the right mindset to generate income, but also to understand money and its place in their life and how they previously related to money and shifting how they relate to it going forward. So we will be creating resources to better support people with that, because there's a lot of people who want to be millionaires but haven't adjusted their mindset to the millionaire mindset. And mindset is almost everything, other than if you hit the lottery. Mindset is everything in you achieving your financial goals. So we'll be creating a lot of awesome things. But financialsuccess2018.com.
I like it. Can't become a millionaire with a dillionaire mindset. And the social media, where can the people find you?
I am uniformly branded as MindFabFinance on all social media platforms. So that's Twitter. I talk a lot on there. Facebook and Instagram. Instagram, my team manages that now, but we're also very active. And if you feel like you need gentle nudges throughout your day, just to remind you to get back on your financial journey, you definitely want to follow us on Instagram, because we do compassionate financial education at MindFabFinance, but we also don't buy into socially acceptable excuses as to why you can't live your best financial life.
I like that.
All right. I was jotting that down. Compassionate finance, not socially acceptable.
Excuses. Socially acceptable excuses, because we've all told ourselves them at any given time. And I think that's why it is balancing between being kind to yourself, but also holding yourself accountable to be the best that you can be.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good way to end. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, guys.
Hashtag banish the balance. A lot of great information from Miss Rapley, as I would have expected. And I hope y'all got some takeaways as well.
Yeah, man, she keeps it real, you know, and there's a lot of things that we talked about on the first episode, and to hear how far she's come since then, and to see her speaking internationally, to see her essentially rising. It's always crazy to see peers making moves and to kind of know what's going on behind the scenes a little bit. So congrats to Tanya for everything that she has going on. And we really hope you enjoyed our chat with her today. So if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. As we always say, the more people we reach, the more people we help. And today's review comes from I Want That Song.
You know, that's very appropriate, because as I sat over here behind the scenes, and I hope y'all didn't hear that, I almost snatched my whole head off because I moved my hand on this corded headphones, and like it had that terrifying moment where I grabbed my head. It was scary over here, folks. So I Want That Song. I barely survived, and here we are with 5 stars. I love these guys. As a millennial with a master's degree, congratulations, I'm learning how little I actually know about finance, career, and independence. These guys have shed a welcome light on these issues, breaking down finances one easy step at a time. Thank you, Marcus Rich. Thank you, Marcus and Rich, for all that you do. I'm going to leave off the government name, but for those people who do want that easy one-step breakdown, don't forget, from the beginning of the show, visit paychecksandbalances.com/email to get your 15-minute guide.
And it's free. Why would you not want free? So definitely check that out. As usual, appreciate everyone listening to the podcast and supporting. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.